Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. We put a bow on all things National Football League Week Now 9, look ahead to Week 10, and of course preview the marquee matchup for Monday Night Football between the Tennessee Titans and Dallas Cowboys. But before we get to all of that, we have to go through the introductory process, and I am, of course, your fearless leader, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one who does all the heavy lifting around these parts, the one, the only Payne Insider.
Monday morning. Oof. I have a little more energy, which I'm surprised about after yesterday's fiasco that was. Oof. Bloody Sunday.
Did you have some caffeine this morning? Did you sleep in? I mean, did you try and mix up the normal routine? What happened?
Yeah, I slept in today. It was one of those mornings where it's like I'm turning off the alarm and I'm getting some sleep. That was basically it after yesterday's. Oh, it was ugly. Great Saturday. Horrific Sunday. Worst Sunday we've had in it's quite some time.
Yeah, some interesting notes. Yeah, you talked to a couple books around town, and we'll get Dave Mason's take on Thursday. But some of the folks I spoke to called it the worst Sunday they've had in years, especially when 11 of the trendiest favorites or the most public sides, because we'll throw the Steelers into that same bucket, all get to the window. Never a recipe for success. But either way, we put that in the rear view. We move forward. Of course, we have Dr. David Chow with us to talk about all things injury related later in the show. And for all of our loyal listeners, I know you guys might not be happy with us for giving out the Browns. Still go to iTunes. 5-star reviews goes a long way towards helping us spread the Bet the Board gospel. But Payne, we may as well jump right in. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And let's go glass half full. You said you slept in a little bit. You're trying to exercise some of the demons. What were some of the good things you saw from NFL action so far this week?
Let's go with the Falcons. I think they are quietly a little undervalued, although this coming week, much to the chagrin of our listeners, probably not undervalued, but they were certainly against Washington. You know, they had won 3 straight now. The offense, I thought, was very good. They got it going on the ground and through the air. Really balanced attack from what I saw. I watched a lot of that game, oddly. I know there were some sharp groups that went under 24 in the first half, so that was kind of a kick in the nuts there. But sharp guys continue to just get destroyed yesterday. We usually see like a different Falcons team away from home and when they're not in the dome. And they don't play very well offensively when they travel outdoors. That wasn't the case, so I thought that was pretty good. In the one area, I guess if you were attempting to back Washington, the one thing that you could have potentially saw as an angle there was being able to run the ball on Atlanta. And I thought they choked out the ground game pretty good. Grady Jarrett is back finally fully healthy. But even when you compare, you know, the Falcons defense with and without him on the field, they still haven't done a great job stopping the ground game with or without. So they choked out that ground game. AP was non-existent. You read some of Dan Quinn's quotes leading up that week, and he said, man, we need to stop AP. We need to make sure we're tackling him around the ankles. And so I thought just a great effort there from the Atlanta Falcons, and maybe they surge here a little bit moving forward.
Well, I want to stay in the NFC South and talk about the New Orleans Saints. They built a 35-14 lead against the Los Angeles Rams, whittled it all away to a 35-35 game, and then all of a sudden, Michael Thomas burst onto the scene yet again, absolutely abusing Marcus Peters from start to finish. Drew Brees in the Saints offense, I think I was ready to say that McVay and Goff had the potential to pass them by. The Saints reminded us why they are still going to be a very difficult out, but I was pretty impressed with their balance, Payne. I mean, a lesser team could have melted under some of that pressure when the Rams start coming full steam ahead, but the Saints defense made a stop when they needed late in the game. We knew there was going to be a premium placed on any semblance of defense, but is New Orleans now the team to beat in the NFC, or do we still think the Rams are going to be that team in January?
Well, if you can get home field advantage, and the Saints certainly inched a little bit closer to that, and I think for your sake, being a Todd Gurley fantasy owner, it's positive that the Saints won that game, and because you just don't want to play New Orleans late in the year at home. That home field advantage is just a huge edge, and you can see some of the other guys start to step up, and it's easier to do that when you're a role player stepping up at home. So you get a little Traquan Smith out there, hasn't been very good on the road, was a nice presence there. What I like to see is a little bit more explosiveness from the offense, something I had talked about that we hadn't seen the last 2 weeks. They had gone uber conservative, running the ball a bunch the last 2 weeks, not taking deep shots down the field. That was the way you're going to have to attack the Rams. They're 29th in explosive pass defense coming in. Marcus Peters, I know everyone loves him. He's on SportsCenter making the highlight plays. He's about as not very fundamental, let's just put it this way, and he constantly gets carved up. And we saw that four explosive passes, and there was just a slew of chunk plays in that like 10, 12, 13-yard, 15-yard range in the pass game that don't kind of qualify as explosive. I'm still not seeing the explosiveness out of the ground game. I know Kamara had one. He had like a 17-yard run. I saw that. Coming in, they were dead last in explosive runs. Last year, they were top five in that category. So you want to see the ground game get a little bit more explosive. But if they can get home field advantage, they're going to be trending towards the Super Bowl, I would think.
Pretty impressive win right there. The Rams have I don't want to even call it a pseudo layup coming up this week. And then, of course, one of the marquee games, and maybe the entire NFL regular season in Mexico City, where they will take on the Kansas City Chiefs. But with the good pain, obviously come the bad. And we can start with Thursday night, because I don't know if I want to give Nick Mullins credit for his NFL debut, 262 yards passing, leading the Niners to a 7.5 yards per play average, or if that was more a direct reflection of what the Oakland Raiders are. And the correct answer to that question is not very fucking good.
the emphatic F-bomb. Wow, I like it. I think sports are great, obviously. You have moments like these. You get an undrafted quarterback who didn't look very good in the preseason, had 5 turnovers on just 93 preseason snaps, and he's out there on this like national stage. He wins the primetime game. It's a blowout. You know, Nick Mullins deserves a ton of credit there, but it didn't look overly difficult to me. I love our audience, so I'm going to estimate a little high here. I would venture to say 90% of our audience like sets the beer down, gets up off the couch, and makes the throw to Pierre Garçon for the touchdown. Nobody was within 30 yards of the guy. You had George Kittle makes this like ridiculous one-hand grab in traffic on a poor throw, takes it 70. Mullins on the second offensive possession gets away with the pick in the end zone. He was efficient, but it was really assisted by the players and Shanahan. Shanahan had like this just ridiculous game plan. He put Mullins in position to succeed all night. I don't have the next gen stats yet, but I would venture to say the separation the wide receivers were getting from the Oakland secondary was huge. He also got help from the ground game, over 5 yards per rush attempt. So you saw a Raiders defense that just flat out quit. Organizationally, they're a mess, and Gruden's only made things worse. I think if you're a Raiders fan, you just think about this. 18 months ago, you're probably like, I got my franchise quarterback, I got my great O-line, I got an elite target in Amari Cooper, we have our premier pass rusher in Khalil Mack. It's gone, like poof, in a blink of an eye. Gruden's a mess.
This team right now, this team is trending towards what, 2016, what was it, 2015, 2016, when the Raiders offense couldn't really do much of anything. And I hate to ask this question, Payne, because it's a knee-jerk reaction and it's a square way of thinking. I mean, how inflated do these Raiders numbers have to be for professional bettors to even consider backing this team, knowing they can't execute the simplest things, and it honestly looks like there is absolutely no fight in this football team whatsoever?
Well, what was interesting was there was actually a lot of fight in them against the Colts. And I know they lost the game. They blew the 28-21 lead, ended up losing by 14. But you at least saw energy. You at least saw effort. Now I know it's a short turnaround game, but that wasn't really in the numbers. They're playing 33 miles from home. There was a lot of talk on the Thursday night game, and I've heard people within the industry. It's so odd because, and maybe our listeners will disagree with me, I think I'm just, you can't be biased. Right. So I was like hearing people say like, oh, you know, the money on Thursday night, it was completely fake. It was like no one in the world is moving a game from 3.5 to then take, you know, that all important key of 2. right. It was information that
Hold on a second. I had Purdue over the weekend. I laid 2.5. Yeah, so true. 2 would have been a key number there to get me a goddamn push, all
right? Right. Now, you know, like in this thing that like all the sharpest guys in the world are like all, you know, huddled around a campfire singing Kumbaya, like it's not reality. You're going to have difference of opinions. And so there was a little money, a difference of opinion on San Francisco plus 2. But there was never like this goal. It's like, hey, I'm going to like, you know, try to dummy this game down off of Oakland minus 3.5 so I can get San Francisco plus 2. Like it's never a real thing there. Just a difference of opinion. So, you know, obviously groups that had intel on the Nick Mullins situation got out ahead. They got mud on their face because, as you mentioned, the Raiders just flat out quit. That was horrible. And again, like Gruden's just like an abject disaster. And we knew this coming in. We talked about it on the preseason podcast. Like, you won a Super Bowl with Tony Dungy's players. You had 2 weeks to prepare for his former team, knew him inside and out. What he's done this year is basically what we saw him do in Tampa after he got rid of all of Tony Dungy's guys. Like, he was in control of the rosters. And I hear people now like, oh, well, they don't have any money and they're preparing for the, you know, the trip to Vegas. And I'm thinking to myself, that's not exactly what happened. If you listen to Gruden in the offseason, he was bringing in all these veterans because he thought he had a chance to win. Now he doesn't have a chance to win. And he's getting rid of all his young guys so he can make an excuse to say, hey, I don't have any talent here. So it just completely creating an excuse for himself. The other one thing that's interesting here is, Gruden also hired a complete bumbling moron, it appears, in Tom Cable, the O-line coach. Seattle couldn't block for years. Cable leaves, suddenly they're a very good running team. Comes to Oakland. Oakland's got one of the best offensive lines 2 years ago. Very good last year when they wanted to block for Carr. They can't block like a folding lawn chair right now. So coaching staff isn't very good here.
Those folding lawn chairs can be a little bit tricky. If you don't get the hinges right in the spot, I mean, they can come down. They can clamp down on a finger. But I want to go back to one thing you said, not even related to football, talking about like sharp guys sitting around a campfire all singing Kumbaya together. I think the better, more accurate reflection and illustration of that would be more like a prison movie where there are different gang wars taking place, where you have guys at separate tables. That's probably more indicative of how the sharp community, yes, you have pockets of guys that work together, but for the most part, everybody is trying to scratch and claw for the same numbers.
I was going to make a reference, but it's way too soon. With the situation that we saw this past week unfold in West Virginia with Whitey Bulger. Oof, tough way to go out there.
I mean, I guess you can make it. I don't know if Whitey's – I mean, I'm sure we have a lot of – yeah, what was he, 89 years old? They wanted to make an example for him being a snitch, and so they gouged his eyes out and they beat him to death?
Well, so, man, I hate to talk about this stuff on the podcast. Well, basically it was set up because apparently he was going to start talking, and there's going to be, like, the FBI secrets coming out about how – he was like their largest informant and they allowed him to do what he did just as long as he informed them of other people. And he's going to start talking about this old guy starting to talk. They didn't want that. So they moved him to like one of the harshest prisons in the country, knowing kind of what would happen. But yeah, they didn't catch it all on film, but apparently 4 guys went into his little area there, had locks in socks and kind of beat him to death, gouged his eyes out, cut his tongue out. And then apparently like they do have footage of the 4 guys leaving his cell, going back to theirs just covered in blood. They changed their outfits and attempted to go back into the cell and mop up the area. So that was an inside job there for sure.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And I wouldn't shock me if it was perpetrated by the government who didn't want some of their sorted plans.
Especially with what we do here.
That's a very good point. And so if I hear a knock on the door by the time Wednesday's podcast rolls around, Payne, it's been a pleasure working with you on Bet the Board for the last couple of years. All right, as far as the bad's concerned, let's go to the game right in your backyard, and I'm not sure who we want to point the finger at, whether it's Sam Darnold for his 4 interceptions, the offensive line that couldn't seem to get a snap correct out of the shotgun, or the fact that the Dolphins win a football game by more than a field goal with 7 first downs, 168 yards of offense, and 3.1 yards per play.
Big win for the fans. I'm trying to figure out what's going on with Adam Gase. He's made some really poor on-field decisions the last 2 games that make me cringe. Somehow has 5 wins with this roster, though. There's not a lot of talent. They're completely decimated by injury. You had the Rashad Jones situation, one of their most talented guys who's supposed to be a leader, kind of removed himself from this game. Odd situation going on there. Brock Osweiler is your quarterback, so I think any win is a good win. I did like to see the quick fix from Gase. That's one thing you can kind of give him credit for. When there's an issue, he gets it fixed pretty quickly. So he brought in 2 guys, signed them off the streets to help the defensive tackle position, and they kind of choked out the ground game. Held the Jets to 3.8 yards per rush attempt, forced Sam Darnold to beat them, and man, I am not going to sign the Sam Darnold death certificate just quite yet, because he's got just, you know, elite arm talent. But he's a very bad quarterback right now. He's not accurate. He's not decisive. He's not sure where to go with the football. He's having a hard time reading defenses. And I get it. It's roughly like 30 starts college and pro, so he's young as hell. But he's not a very good quarterback right now.
Do you think some of the things that you've seen watching his mechanics are easily corrected, or do you think there are issues that are going to continue to plague him as he goes through the development of a young quarterback?
The whole thing's a mess. His accuracy is off, too. I mean, there's a play where it's like a quick little out route for 2 yards to Curse, where they're just trying to pick up a first down, and the ball's thrown 4 yards behind him. It's bad. And I mean, he's not getting any help from his receivers. Curse looks like he'd rather be anywhere but on a football field. I mean, he's standing out of bounds on one catch for 5 yards. He looks so disinterested. Quincy Enunwa was
back. It's a
good
spot not to get hit. It's a good, I mean, if you don't want to get hit, you stand out of bounds. It's smart and strategic.
Quincy Enunwa is still their horse. You got to get him the ball in easier situations. They had a nice couple, you know, wide receiver screens there where he kind of puts his head down. He's just a Brahma bull. He was dragging defenders with him. So just a freak, quick recovery from a high ankle sprain, was out only 2 weeks. So, he is their dude. Robbie Anderson still kind of battled some injuries. But one interesting thing, you listen to Jeremy Bates this past week, he said, man, on Monday, I didn't think we had a prayer to get either of these guys back. Didn't completely have them in the game plan. But, you know, with Robbie Anderson, it's more of just, you know, run deep kind of thing. But so you had your two receivers back, and for Sam Darnold, still did nothing. It was ugly, man.
All right. It's funny that you mention ugly, because there was one game that might have been one of the worst that I've seen all season in the National Football League. And I know you can say this a lot with Buffalo Bills games, but this one might have taken the cake, Payne. The Chicago Bears put together a 190-yard offensive outburst, yet put 40-plus points on the board. They averaged 4.1 yards per play. Now, the Bills weren't going to be outdone. They only amassed 264 yards of offense. They had 3.3 yards per play. They, of course, in typical Bills fashion, turned the ball over 4 times, lose the turnover battle, -3. And the two teams combined for 24 total penalties for nearly 300 yards. Now, you and I joked about this because we said you can't factor in defensive touchdowns when you're handicapping football games. I think our mindset's starting to change when it comes to the Buffalo Bills with Nathan Peterman under center.
One of those weird games, because there's not a single power rating that would have had the Bears laying 10.5 on the highway here. But there was professional money on the Bears, and I think it's because of that element, right? You anticipate a lot of short fields. You anticipate a lot of turnovers, some defensive touchdowns possibly, and it's tough to go into a game thinking that. But when you had Buffalo with this all-out defensive effort on Monday night against the Patriots, a short week, they're eventually going to wear out. But I didn't watch the game, and I refused to watch a single snap, but I did have our little play-by-play generator up in like the top right corner of my computer watching, and I felt like every time that I turned to take a peek, it was interception Peterman, defensive touchdown Chicago. Peterman's an absolute mess. You listen to the post-game presser again, it is just, it's brutal. It's tough to watch. These guys are going to go down as one of the worst offenses in NFL history.
Anything else as far as being really ugly jump off the page to you over the weekend?
I think you got to go Vance Joseph, right? He's pretty inept at this point. I think he has to be fired. I don't care that you're in Denver and there was, you know, altitude and the ball travels significantly further. With 43 seconds left, they got 2 plays off. Settled for a 51-yard field goal. In his mind, after the 5-yard pass, you know, he wanted his offense to huddle up. I don't get that. And then they just burned clock and ran one up the middle for a 1-yard loss and then settled for what in his mind was an easy 51-yarder. I don't get that. He needs to be relieved of his duties immediately. The season is lost at this point, so there's no reason to keep him. The players don't like him. You look at where some of their issues lie. It's in the secondary. There's blown coverages all over the place. He's a secondaries coach. When your team is bad at what your best attribute of your head coach is, like, there's an issue. You just got to relieve him of his duties. At this point, it's clear Case Keenum isn't that dude. He's a stopgap. I know a lot of the players loved him in the offseason. They all now are calling him a glorified backup, so they know what he is. This was supposed to be a game for Case Keenum. That was his revenge game. He talked about it all week. Bill O'Brien, that was a guy who told him, hey, you're never going to be more than a third-string quarterback in this league. And I know he completed the big fourth-down pass to keep the drive going and set him up for a game-winning field goal, but he looked like a third-string quarterback. So that this team, just blow it up, lose every game, and potentially go and get your quarterback.
Nothing like having a handful of NFL teams to watch over the last 8 weeks of the regular season, seeing them tank as they try and improve their draft stock going forward and figure out what kind of reclamation projects they have on hand. But from the good, the bad, and the ugly, pain, our Monday tradition around here, look ahead numbers. And we may as well start with one of the marquee games of the weekend, and maybe the only marquee game on Thursday night, where it's the Pittsburgh Steelers playing host to the Carolina Panthers. Your look ahead line for this game had the Steelers a 6.5-point favorite. And now we're looking at Carolina only catching 4 at betonline.ag. 2.5-point adjustment on the strength of Carolina's win over Tampa, or the Steelers going on the road against Baltimore in a workmanlike fashion and getting the W.
I think it's a little of both, right? You know, Carolina is a little different team away from home, but I think at this point, and we've bashed them, so I you know, you have to give them credit. Like, North Turner, tip your cap to him. Never thought I'd say this, but he's changed his ways. After this long in the NFL, he was out of the league for a year. He had been fired multiple times in a handful of years. He had to change things up. He's done so. There are a lot of nice things I'm seeing pre-snap that caused some commotion and confusion. And his son, Scott Turner, the quarterback coach, he is a huge analytics guy. So I can tell you with 100% certainty, he is supplying dad with all the necessary metrics and tools to be successful. Pittsburgh, they performed well, obviously, but it was a physical game against the Ravens. I can tell you, if you look at some of the history after Ravens games, Pittsburgh doesn't perform overly well. But I know we'll break this game down on Thursday, so more then for sure.
Yes, probably the biggest game on the slate, with two playoff teams doing battle on a short week. Look ahead number here, Payne. We've seen major adjustments in the market. Look ahead number had the Falcons, 1.5-point road favorites. Right now, as I look at the trusty odds screen, I see Atlanta, a 4-point favorite at betonline.ag, trending towards 4.5.
Atlanta was a little undervalued coming into last week. They've won 3 straight now after the Washington game. Kudos to them. Dominated Washington off the bye. I mentioned this earlier. We usually see just a different Falcons offense outdoors, but they 7.7 yards per play. Didn't matter whether it was run or pass. Atlanta's offense was pretty dominant here. You are going to have to check on the status of 2 Cleveland Browns cornerbacks, E.J. Gaines and Denzel Ward. Not salty, but 2 starting quarterbacks left in the first quarter of the game against the Chiefs. That's not going to look very well when that happens. So you're going to have to monitor those two, because you have, you know, you're going up against, obviously, Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Ridley, and Sanu. You're going to want 2 starting cornerbacks. I know Ward was out with the hip, and then E.J. Gaines was returning, you know, from a 2-week hiatus dealing with a concussion. I guess got flared up again. He left with a concussion, didn't come back. So that would be huge losses. I liked what I saw from Cleveland a little bit. They looked very competent in stretches. The sources that I had said Freddie Kitchens was the best offensive mind in their building. They had put forth 2 of the best offensive practices that had been seen by this specific person the last 3 years. I liked what I saw. Would have liked some point afters there rather than going for 2, but the mantra was, you know, be aggressive this week. So you like that. They effectively could have scored 24 there if you kick your point afters, and then you're sitting there potentially looking at 31 points with the backdoor cover there, which looked very possible when you get a very poor Kansas City team defensively that was also playing prevent. So you could have potentially had 31 points from the Cleveland offense, something we had not seen. Now, I know it's Kansas City, but I think that's progress. One thing that did concern me a little bit from the snaps that I saw, and I didn't watch the whole game. I'll go back and watch this week. Baker Mayfield missing some easy throws. Yeah?
Yep, he did. A lot of the stuff downfield, if it wasn't the quick initial read and inside of 5-10 yards, anything downfield seemed to get away from him a little bit. He had a chance to complete some throws in the middle of the field and outside the boundary, but just couldn't get on the same page, whether it's receivers, whether it's the throws Baker was making. A little bit troubling knowing how accurate a passer he was during his college time at Oklahoma.
Yeah, and I know Higgins, it was his first week back, so that, you know, it's nice to get your second wide receiver. He did find Callaway on a deep shot, which has been an issue this season. But, you know, Lincoln Riley, and I've been pounding the table for him, he is just a brilliant offensive mind. So that was for the folks that did have questions about Baker Mayfield. They were kind of, they arrived from Lincoln Riley being so good and making Baker Mayfield look elite. What would it look like without Lincoln Riley? Now, obviously, we're, you know, Baker Mayfield seems to be, of the rookie quarterbacks, looks the best thus far. So
yeah, I would say it's a fair assessment.
Yeah, so I think, you know, obviously it's his rookie year. He got thrown into the fire. There's going to be improvements there. I like his moxie. I like his makeup. So we'll see if he can improve in the accuracy categories. But it's certainly a little bit concerning to see him overthrow a lot of balls.
This number paint a little bit bizarre to me. When you look at the look-ahead number here, the Colts, a 1.5-point favorite at home against Jacksonville. We see both of these teams off of a bye, yet the market reopens at betonline.ag with the Jags a full field goal underdog. And I shouldn't even say that because there was some 3.5. That hook almost instantaneously evaporating from the market.
Yeah. You know, 2-point move through the three is pretty massive adjustment in the division game. Schefter tweeted out, to expect Leonard Fournette back for this game. So you would envision that kind of gets Jacksonville's offense back into being who they were, a run-first team. Then you rely on your defense, a defense that had kind of gotten fatigued, so the bye week should help there. Indianapolis is a really interesting ball club right now. They are far better than their record indicates. I know a lot of people thought 2 weeks ago it was just a pure Oakland fade, but no, it was a bye on the Colts. Their offensive line has been exceptional. Anthony Costanzo is back. He is killing it. A couple other guys in that offensive line are having great seasons. A couple young guys producing really nicely. And when you look at the overall landscape there, the offensive line fourth in pass protection, second in adjusted line yards. Andrew Luck finally has some help from the guys up front and the ground game. So the Colts are better than we think, but that was a massive adjustment there, I would say.
And last but not least, we see the Chicago Bears playing host to the Detroit Lions next Sunday. Look ahead number had the Bears 3.5. But we see the number right now at betonline.ag, 6.5, soft 7, depending on what you want to call it. Interesting adjustment through some of the secondary key numbers.
Well, you mentioned the Bears' offensive ineptitude were actually outgained by Buffalo, so that's never positive. They've beaten, two bad teams in consecutive weeks against the AFC East there, I believe. I get it. And Detroit hasn't looked good in back-to-back weeks. So you get a team winning 2 games straight. You get Detroit looking abysmal 2 straight weeks. Division game kind of feels like a last-ditch effort here for the Lions to keep within distance of the rest of the folks in the North. I know Khalil Mack was close to returning this week. Let's see if he plays in this one. Lions offensive line was bad. They could not protect this past week. A unit that we had saw a clear upgrade from. But, man, they just – Stafford was under pressure all day long. Certainly some inflation in this number, though.
Yeah, Vikings just look like the more physical football team and fully engaged there. Detroit seemed overwhelmed from the start, and it just kind of snowballed on there. I'm still trying to figure out what Matthew Stafford was looking to accomplish with his unique variation of the read option, I guess I'll call it.
Here's what's
pitching
interesting.
Pitching it out to Kerryon Johnson.
Yeah, here's what's interesting. It's like, you know, we're in the fantasy age now, so it's all about the receivers. These games are decided in the trenches, and that's exactly where this game was decided. You could have the best information in the world, which was, hey, Stephon Diggs isn't going to play in this one, and Thielen is out there, but he is dealing with a severe calf injury, which required it to be heated all game long, didn't do much. And Xavier Rhodes, which everyone was clamoring about being back in the lineup, but I've been kind of hammering the table for this for like last couple weeks, is he's not close to himself. Found out he tweaked his ankle again in Friday's practice. He leaves in the second quarter. Kind of returns and just a shell of himself. So you had a lot of key injuries here for the Minnesota Vikings, and you had an upgrade. Anza got upgraded for the Lions, and you would have thought that would have been a positive, get some pressure on Kirk Cousins with an offensive line that also had 2 guys out. So it was one of those weird games, but they just got dominated in the trenches, and that's what it came down to.
Well, you mentioned injuries, and we have the perfect man for the job.
Are you injured or are you hurt?
When injuries occur in the NFL, there's only one man to turn to.
If you're hurt, you can still play. If you're injured, you can't.
Let's check in with 17-year NFL team doctor turned medical analyst, Dr. David Chow.
So are you hurt or are you injured?
This is Chow's Corner.
He joins us here every Monday on the Bet the Board podcast. You, of course, can follow Dr. David Chow on Twitter at ProFootballDoc, former NFL head team doctor for 17 years. Great for real-time updates when you watch your favorite NFL teams on Sunday. And Dr. Chow, we can't go through a week in the NFL season with some marquee injuries. And some Bengals fans got pretty bad news despite even being on the bye week this past Sunday.
Yeah, well, the news came, I think it was second to last play, the last catch for A.J. Green in their last game the week before. And he hopped to the sideline. And by video, he appeared to have a right turf toe injury. Now, Bengals fans know that in 2015, I believe, that he had dealt with that issues on that toe and likely lost a little range of motion and some stiffness, et cetera. And the thought initially by video is that with the bye week, he might be able to be back, but he's still spotted in a boot. And then came the report from Adam Schefter that he's going for a second opinion with a foot expert in Green Bay. That concerned people because the word surgery were mentioned. Now, I don't think it's going to be that bad. I don't see how the Bengals medical staff sit on this for a week and then send him sometime this coming week for a exam for second opinion. If surgery was really on the table, they would have jumped on it. However, I do think this is potentially a sign that he may not play this week or is going to lose some time. I mean, really, when you look at it, how many players don't jump to a second opinion during their bye week, but then end up potentially missing practice time to fly to get seen on their foot. So that's what is somewhat worrisome there.
Never a good thing when you lose your stud at the skill positions, especially for a Bengals team trying to get back on track. But we had a division leader besieged by injuries on the offensive line yesterday. I know it's not the sexiest position, but you don't have guys up front to block, it creates big problems. And that was readily apparent for the Washington Redskins as they were drummed by the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, you know, I think a big part of their getting to first place has been the Hogs, the offensive line. That's been a strength for them and has allowed Adrian Peterson to perform well. But all of a sudden, it may turn into a tremendous weakness. I mean, it is entirely possible that the Redskins won't have four of their five starters for the next game. Four of them are dealing with injuries. Trent Williams was already out with a dislocated thumb where he had surgery, and he'll be out for probably most, if not all, of November. And then their left guard got knocked out of the game early on a bull rush from Grady Jarrett, landed awkwardly off balance. He's got an MRI pending. And by video, it's limited video because the cameras don't focus just on offensive linemen as opposed to skill position players. But there is some worry for potential ACL tear. That would mean the season for him. Then right guard, Brandon Scherff, former Pro Bowler, he got injured. Once again, not great video, but based on his reaction and based on the periphery of what happened, there's some worry for a pec tendon rupture, which would mean surgery in the end of his season. Now, the only pseudo good news is the right tackle, Morgan Moses, left the game but came back with what appeared to me to be an MCL. Yes, he finished the game. He was a little hobbled, but sometimes that swells overnight and limits motion. So, you know, big risk for three of the five not being there, and it could be four of the five.
Not good news for Washington Redskins fans. They were decimated with offensive line injuries last year, one of the most injury-riddled units in the NFL. I'm going to ask you about quarterbacks, Dr. Chow, because that's what I do. I am a quarterback whore. let's talk about a guy in my backyard, Ryan Tannehill. Local media down here in Miami suggests he is still a long ways away from a few reports that I read. He was doing some throwing leading up to the Jets game, but had zero velocity. One reporter said he could only throw it about 7 to 10 yards down the field. Now I'm hearing people call this Andrew Luck 2.0. I'd rather get my information from you than a beat reporter. What is kind of the soup to nuts prognosis for Ryan Tannehill?
Well, the big news this week was that Adam Gase called it a capsule injury. And if you go back to my October 15th article at profootballdoc.com, I talked about the capsule injury. That was one of the main possibilities. You know, when your arm is cocked back, ready to throw the ball, and it gets dead stopped by a defender, that's what happens. You can stretch or injure the capsule. And I said at that time, capsule injury is unpredictable in how it recovers. It depends on the extent of the tear or partial nature of the tear and location of the injury. And at that point, I did make a small reference to Andrew Luck that it was similar in how it happened. I'm not ready at all to say that this is going to be Andrew Luck 2.0, but the way he was injured is in a similar category. And I would agree with the local media that he's not that close yet. He's certainly not going to play next week and be ready next week. It's not impossible that he'll be ready in a couple of weeks, though. I mean, like I said, the capsule injury is unpredictable in how it responds.
Oof. So it sounds like Brock Osweiler versus Aaron Rodgers. That is a scary thing to think about. And you were spot on. You were first on the capsule injury. So kudos to you there. Marcus Mariota, a quarterback that we're going to see tonight. What do we expect from him when we see him out on the field? I know he's talked about the glove is now gone. He claims feeling is back in his fingers. Do we expect to see 100% Marcus Mariota this evening?
I think we're close to it. Yeah. And I think he's done a really, really good job. You know, I don't think people believe me when I first talked about his lack of grip and the loss of feeling and the use of glove and the ulnar nerve issue and so forth, and that it would last and linger. And I really think he's done a great job with it. And Mike Vrabel and company have done a great job with it. I mean, they've been, you know, they're still in contention. I mean, if this were to happen to most teams, to their star quarterback, they'd be out of contention by now. And they've been able to win enough to stay in contention. And I look for him to be, you know, look, it's week nine. Not many people are 100% in week nine, but he's probably as close as you can be and as close as he's been all season to being 100% with that ulnar nerve issue. And I think last week before the bye, I noticed already that he was throwing the ball much better against the Chargers in London, really able to drive it and throw spirals. And so I think it will be a slightly different Marcus Mariota than we see than in the previous few games.
And Dr. Chawla, that would be music to the ears of Titans fans. There were some Patriot fans sitting with bated breath last night, especially when that game was tied headed into the fourth quarter. What kind of updates do you have regarding the expectations for Rob Gronkowski going forward and, of course, New England's talented running back, Sony Michel?
Yeah, you know, I think you're absolutely right. That's where the concern is. James White was out a little bit during the game, but came back, and I don't think he had a serious injury by video. But I think the bigger concern is for Gronk right now. Now, when it first happened and the surprise inactive from his back a couple weeks ago, you know, it was said not to be related to the disc, and, you know, muscle spasms happen and anyone can wake up with a sore back one day. But now it has lingered. He's missed the game 2 weeks ago. He had a subpar performance last week and out again this week with the back. Sure, he's been at limited practice, but you're never sure what that really means. But to me, what this means with his back, the way he's moving, how stiff he is, and how it has lingered, that this can't be just a simple muscle spasm, I tweaked my back. There has to be something more to it. Now, I'm not saying his career is over. I'm not saying his season is over. I'm not saying he's going to need surgery. But this isn't something that's going to disappear next week and be completely 100%. A good progression of this is that he gets better and better, returns to play, and maybe by December returns to the old Gronk form, which might be an expected course with him. Sony Michel, I think the news is probably a little bit better. I wouldn't make too much about his not playing this week. He was limited practice all last week. I think he'll get better and better. I don't think his injury was that horrific, even though it looked bad by video. Medically, I didn't think it was bad. And, you know, the Patriots, they have a next man up mentality, and they don't really believe on activating players that are limited, a limited snap count or whatever. They feel like if you're in the game, you're in the game and you can do it all. So with that in mind, I don't think Sonny Michel's absence is that big a deal, and he should be back next week.
You can follow him on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. Outstanding injury updates, not only throughout the course of the week, but in real time every single Thursday, Sunday, and Monday through the football season. Dr. Chow, can't thank you enough for your time this morning and look forward to chatting with you again same time next week.
Thanks, guys.
Always interesting to get Dr. Chow's take, Payne. I mean, mentioning the Redskins' offensive line troubles, they'll have their hands full this weekend with a little bit of an underrated Tampa Bay Buccaneers defensive line. I'd imagine you talk about skill position guys and A.J. Green, Rob Gronkowski, Sony Michel. Do probably want to pick his brain a little bit. I'm curious to get his take on the Chargers and everyone talking about this team. Not even a dark horse right now in the AFC, when we might actually see Joey Bosa on the field.
That would certainly be a huge get back for the Chargers. I think we'll see him at some point this year, but I know he wants to return when he's 110%. But man, you just think about the Chargers. How good would they be if they had Hunter Henry and Joey Bosa? I mean, it's a championship contender, I would think, if you had those two guys. Unfortunately, you don't right now, and you're still winning ball games. So, yeah, that would have been a nice one to ask. I always a little hesitant about asking about Chargers stuff with him, but I don't think he's professional enough. He definitely could have handled it. The offensive line injuries for the Redskins, man, it's a tough blow. probably a little overrated team, and that's the interesting matchup. Let's see how Vinny Curry and Gerald McCoy kind of came out of the Carolina game. Those were two clear upgrades. They got both those guys back on the Bucs defensive line against the Carolina Panthers. Didn't seem to matter much, but let's see how how they came away from the Carolina game, if they're still a little beat up or not. Because if you have those guys in there and you got Washington dealing with, you know, three, four guys potentially out in the offensive line, something to certainly consider.
Yeah, be some interesting angles worth uncovering before we reconvene on Thursday. But we do have one thing left on the docket, and that, of course, the preview of tonight's Monday Night Football game, where it's the Dallas Cowboys, a 4.5-point home favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game sits at 40. And Payne, let's start with the number, because we've seen this thing open shorter. We've seen that thing climb as high as 6, 6.5 before there was a very different opinion out there that the underdog may have a little too much value.
Yeah, I was told I was an idiot for discussing line moves a few Mondays ago in the Giants game. and we're seeing a similar shape here, where Dallas opens 4, gets immediately sent out to 6, 6.5 in some places, and then immediately sent back down. And we can discuss how it's easy just to pick the winner of a game. They win 85% of the time if you just pick the winner. And if you pick the underdog, they win 82% of the time outright. Like, I get that, but we have to deal in kind of reality and what some of these numbers mean and how many games fall around that specific number, right? So it's like easy to say just pick the winner, but when you're talking about a 3, you know, you have to just sparse out games that are lined 2.5, 3, and 3.5, and then find out how many games land 3, which you'll find out depending on if you use the closing number, the opening number. It's like 9 to 11%, which is significant. So, you know, there's a reason there, you know, numbers like this are tried to be achieved, so to speak. It takes very little money from someone sharp early in the week to drive a game from 4.5 or 5.5 out to 6.5, so you can then take 7. From what I have seen on this game, and it actually complies with the screen here, is under and dog. Now, at these prices, you know, 6 is, and again, a lot of people will say, oh, what's 6? Well, it's a secondary number, and it's actually the number that's improved its and most importance since the extra point was moved back. We've seen a move towards games, I believe it's about a 2% increase in games landing 6 now that the extra point's been moved back. So it's pretty significant there. Let's see where this goes. Not really sure where the line will go from here, but the professional side is Tennessee and under here.
All right, let's start with the matchup of the Titans offense, which has clearly been their Achilles heel all season against the strength of this Cowboys football team, which is their defense. I mean, the ground game finally showed up a little bit in London for the Titans, but this team is still yet to score more than 20 points in regulation this season, Payne. They're 30th in total offense, they're 30th in yards per play at 4.8, which puts them just ahead of the aforementioned Buffalo Bills and Arizona Cardinals. Marcus Mariota, though, we heard Dr. Chow mention it, that he should be healthier and at least more equipped to grip the football, put a little more spin on there. Do we think we should expect market improvement from Tennessee with some extra time to prepare here?
You would hope, and that information kind of came down, I want to say, on the 30th. He returned, maybe it was the 31st. Mariota returned to practice without the glove he was using basically to help him with the grip. So he claims he's back to feeling his fingers. He's got feeling there. I believe that's probably a positive sign. We know at this point Mariota hasn't had the ability to keep defenses honest with the deep ball. You can throw in the tape. Like, opposing defenses just load the box, stop the run. They're squatting on passes. They're effectively guarding like these 15-yard areas because Mariota hasn't been able to throw deep. The numbers back that up. He's got a 36 passer rating on deep throws. I think we need to see more of Mariota using his legs now that he is healthier as well. I think the offense is going to have to try to pick up some cheap yards. They're going to have to figure out how to hit the explosives. I know that's a tall task. You look at some of those metrics right now. Titans are 30th in explosive runs, 30th in explosive passing in the Cowboys defense, top 5 in preventing explosive passes and runs. So that trend's going to have to get bucked a little bit. You're going to have to figure out how to get some cheap yards there. You would hope with the bye week there's a little more creativity there. I think we do see some improvement here. As good as the Dallas defense is, the Titans have faced the toughest schedule of opposing defenses, so this shouldn't be new to them. LaFleur has been pretty much a mess, but he's had 2 weeks to prep. again, he's got a fully functioning quarterback. How you need to attack the Dallas defense is efficiently through the air. Again, they're stopping explosive passes, but they are 20th in passing success rate defense. So you look at some of these throws on the short intermediate stuff, which is where Mariota kind of lives, in that 1 to 14 yard area. Doesn't matter the direction, left, right, or middle. Dallas allowed 77% of those passes to be completed. They've allowed a 102 passer rating. So the short stuff here should work well against Dallas. Maybe we see some Deion Lewis in the pass game. We know how effective and efficient he is there. Through 7 games, Dallas has allowed 46 of 58 running back passes to be completed for nearly 7.5 yards a pop. So you'd think maybe a little Deion Lewis sprinkled in the pass game here tonight as well.
I mean, I was surprised, and this is my ignorance here showing its ugly face, that Deion Lewis actually leads the Titans in rushing yards as well. You have to imagine Derrick Henry on a bit of a short leash. But to further support your point talking about Mariota, Coach Vrabel comes out and flat out says it. Signal caller's officially back at full capacity, throwing just as well now as he did before the elbow injury early this year. Of course, that remains to be seen, but optimism reigns supreme throughout Nashville. On the other side of the ball, Payne, the Dallas Cowboys offense remains one of the bigger enigmas in the NFL week to week. I mean, they fire their offensive line coach, obviously looking for a scapegoat there for some of the play calling. Amari Cooper comes in. He'll make his team debut today. Can it be anywhere close to Demaryius Thomas? And I hear you laughing in the background, so rather than me droning on and on, I want to hear you support your laughter.
No, I thought that was good. You are spot on about the O-line coach being fired. I like this. This is a new Todd. Get the guy on TV. He's fully prepared. I love this.
Oh, fuck off. Oh, here we go. Here we go. Shots fired this Monday morning. This is what happens when you sleep in.
I was having a sense of humor after a 1-5 Sunday.
It's good. I like you to keep it light. I like you to keep it light. We don't need somber pain here on a Monday, bringing everybody down when they listen on their lunch break.
So, you know, they fired their coach, Paul Alexander, during the bye. I think, listen, it sucks losing Travis Frederick. And, you know, I think Alexander is probably the scapegoat, as you mentioned, which is pretty funny because, I mean, Jason Garrett's an absolute toolbox.
He comes from the Vance Joseph school of thought. Let's just pick up 7 yards, run 2 plays in the final 50 seconds, and kick 50-yard field goals, hoping that's how we're going to win football games.
So, you know, Travis Frederick's just a massive loss, and I've talked about this, like, ad nauseum here. Like, you don't just lose, like, on-field production with how good he is, like, physically. But he was their coach. He was helping out Dak Prescott get in the right formations, get in the right protections, and we've just seen this massive decline in run blocking because of it. Dallas, the last 2 seasons, if you remember, number 1 in rushing success rate. This year, 18th. It's like an 8% decline year over year in production. You know, as mobile as Dak is, through eight weeks, 6th worst offensive line in terms of pass protection. So there was some issues with the offensive line. It's just not as good. You got a left tackle dealing with injuries. So you lose your center. Your left tackle isn't 100%. 2 most important positions along the offensive line. You can see why this is happening. You mentioned Amari Cooper. I don't know what it's going to look like for him. Right at its core, like, the Raiders were an above-average team in terms of the amount they threw the football per game. The Cowboys are 29th in passes attempted. So it's, you know, if you're a fantasy guy and you have Amari Cooper, I wouldn't think it's probably a positive. When you start to look at where he's been most productive, it sucks to say this because, you know, he's supposed to be a number one receiver and you just gave up a first rounder for him. He's most productive in the slot. It's not outside. He averages nearly a full yard more on routes in the slot versus outside, but you have Cole Beasley. So you would think Cooper's probably going to line up outside here and not be as effective. You know, the interesting part here is whatever the game plan is for Jason Garrett, we're probably going to see it throughout the entire game. Because when you look at the spread, you look at the total, you would assume Dallas isn't going to have to avert from its game plan. So let's see how good this game plan is. I would think Zeke's got to touch the ball 25 times. We're now smartly seeing specifically designed runs for Dak, not just like the improvised scrambles. Tennessee does struggle a little bit with mobile quarterbacks. Whatever the best Dallas offense is, I think we should see it here. Let's see if you've solved the O-line problems by removing your coach. There's no excuses at this point, right? I mean, you got a receiver that you view to be very good. You've had 2 weeks to prep. And Jason Garrett's got the fantastic mind. Sarcasm there. But you kind of get my point here.
Hey, he went to Princeton. Be careful.
Yes, but it's not translating to the football field. There's nothing creative going on there. It finally took him how many years to realize, like, Dak needs to use his legs a little bit more on designed runs. They have been better at home, so that is the saving grace. Again, touch the ball, hopefully for Zeke 25 times. Have 5 to 8 designed runs for Dak, and your offense should improve. Defensively for the Titans, it is an improved unit under Vrabel, but the things they do best are just kind of slightly above average. The important metrics that you're looking for are about average. When you kind of throw it all up in a bowl and mix it together, you know, the Titans right now 19th in overall defensive efficiency, and that production has come against the 5th easiest schedule of offenses. Now, obviously, Vrabel doesn't get a juggernaut tonight, and he's had 2 weeks to prepare. So, you know, this is probably a normalized performance here, I would think, from the Titans defense.
If I threw out a prop, most rushing yards tonight, Marcus Mariota or Dak Prescott, how heavy a favorite do you make Dak in this spot?
Oof. It's a good question. I think, yeah, man, I think both are going to run a lot tonight. You'd have to think, right? In this game, you got a total of 40. You got two teams that are 3-4. It's balls to the wall. The team goes to 3-5. Their season's about done, so it should be all hands on deck. Marcus Mariota fully healthy. You know, or you would hope, that Dak is going to have at least 5 to 8 designed runs in him. It's tough to say. That's a tough line. I would think you'd probably, just knowing the designed run factor, you would think probably Dak is the favorite here for sure. I don't know. What are the lines? I know you've probably looked at what the overall.
No, I actually haven't. I just kind of wanted to throw some of this stuff out there and get your sentiment. I haven't seen all the prop postings early this morning for the normal Monday Night Football offering that we'll get.
So just game plan oriented, you're going to expect 5 to 8 designed runs for Dak. Now, with a healthy Mariota, 2 weeks prepare, maybe you have some designed runs in there for him. You'd be smart to do that because I don't think the offense is good enough to consistently just rely on his arm right now. But that's a great question. I'm not sure. I don't even know what the yards are. I'd love to look at that right now. I don't have it in front of me.
And one thing I'll say about this game, too, you mentioned how important it is to define the season. Neither one of these teams has a layup coming up next week. The Titans get a home date against New England, and we'll see the Cowboys again in prime time on the road at Philadelphia. So this is must-win type territory for both these teams. So, all right, we have an intriguing Monday Night Football game, even if it's not the two best teams in the league. And for those folks that don't look ahead like we do, Payne, they might not want to look at the Week 10 NFL slate because cherish these good, intriguing games while we have them because there ain't much to get excited about next Sunday. Special thanks to Dr. David Chow, who joins us every Monday to talk about injuries and what they mean to your favorite teams, to your betting, and, of course, your season-long fantasy outlooks as well. Payne, unless you have a best bet on this game, I think we've done enough damage for a Monday morning.
Yeah, I do not. I do not at this point, unfortunately. I would have liked to now. Again, we've kind of talked where the sharp money is, but you're getting now at 40. It's certainly tougher. There's some key numbers in there, obviously, more scoring in the NFL these days. So those more you're looking at 43, 44, more 44, 45 is your key numbers in the NFL totals market. But certainly you don't want to be on like the wrong side of 42 and 41 and a half and kind of those things. So I would envision there maybe being some, well, there was already. Some first half under money at 20.5. That number seems to be gone at this point. You know, I wouldn't endorse a bet here, but if you got absolutely bored out of your freaking mind, maybe you're looking first half under.
Understand completely. And for those folks, remember you can follow Dr. David Chow on Twitter at Pro Football Doc. You can follow Payne on Twitter as well at Payne Insider. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there too. But most importantly, please follow the Bet the Board Twitter account at Bet the Board Pod. All right, Payne, we've done enough football. Any life advice, any PSAs, anything you want to get off your chest before we take a 48-hour hiatus and reconvene Wednesday for college football?
No, other than the Cards are really bad this week. College football, not great either. NFL, pretty ugly. Again, week 11 NFL podcast on that Thursday. We will announce the iTunes contest winner. So leave the 5-star review and leave a nice little sentence. You are automatically entered in to win a Bet the Board swag pack, Visa gift card, and some gear. Get the 5-star reviews in, leave a nice little sentence, and again, you are automatically entered. We'll announce that winner on the Thursday week 11 podcast.
Thursday week. Yeah, that's a lot of math for me schedule-wise. I can't quite figure out what the hell's going on around here. So hopefully our listeners picked up on it, as they will.
Ooh, maybe I'm Thursday sure. Is Thursday around Thanksgiving. It might be a Wednesday or a Tuesday.
That's what I'm trying to figure out scheduling-wise, how all that's going to work out. But you know what? We'll circle back. We'll figure out the schedule.
Whatever
we'll share with our listeners
week,
like we always
whatever
do.
The big week 11 NFL podcast is. That's the one.
All right. All right. We'll figure all of it out from there. But either way.
All right. I like that.
Oh, my God. This is what happens when you get punch drunk after a rough NFL slate on Sunday. But best
didn't
of
have a
to
single
all
drink,
of
just 8 hours of sleep, which is pretty scary.
I didn't have 8 hours of sleep. I didn't have a single drink. I felt like I just wanted to hit myself in the head with a goddamn mallet.
Oh.
But
the Aaron Jones fumble was just the ultimate kick in the nuts there. That's what
I would call suboptimal, yeah. to say the least. So hopefully our listeners fared a little bit better over the weekend. Best of luck with any of your Monday Night Football wagers on the Titans and Cowboys, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.